It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, with months of so much political turmoil here in the United States, it's easy to ignore political strife going on in other parts of the world. This half hour, we want to focus on two countries in Latin America and South America that are seeing significant upheaval, Brazil and Venezuela. Joining us to do that via Skype from Sao Paulo in Brazil, Pedro dos Santos is an assistant professor of political science and director of the International Studies Program at Luther College in Decorah. Pedro, thank you for joining us via Skype from Brazil.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
And you are doing some research down in Brazil, and we'll get to that once we start talking more about Brazil. Linda Barrow is with us in our Iowa City studio, professor of political science at Coe College. Thank you for coming to our studio, Linda.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Let's start off with Venezuela. Get acquainted with what's going on there. This past week, I understand, a nationwide strike in Venezuela, protesters clashing with riot police. Just to make sure we're on the same page here, Venezuela, a country of about 30 million people, so roughly 10 times the population of Iowa. Mm-hmm. It's in the throes of the political and economic crisis right now, leading to a shortage of basic goods and some soaring inflation. Let's hear a little bit of sound from these protests. This particular sound from July 16th in Caracas, the protesters protesting the rewriting of the country's constitution. Linda, you'll tell us about that in a minute. Let's listen to these protests. Deadly as well on this particular day. A woman killed, three people injured. Let's listen to it, and you'll hear a gunshot. Okay, Linda Barrow, what's going on in Venezuela?
Well, for the last 110-plus days, there have been almost daily protests, many of them in the capital of Caracas. These clashes with police have been amping up. The police have been using tear gas, rubber bullets, water cannons, on occasion even plowing into protesters. The government has been bringing in the military, the National Guard, paramilitary, and so on. In addition to the death last week, there have been dozens of other deaths, unfortunately, hundreds, probably over 1,000 injuries, and a few hundred people who have been detained, essentially as political prisoners. And so there's this growing cycle. And I should note that sometimes what protesters want to do actually is to provoke an overreaction by the government, in part to delegitimize it in the eyes of other Venezuelans, mm-hmm. as well as in the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that is what's going on, but certainly there has been an amping up.
Give us some more background here, because Venezuela used to be ruled by Hugo Chavez. Now his successor, President Nicolas Maduro, is in power. What is this Maduro's plans to rewrite the Constitution? In what way does he want to change the Constitution?
Well, ironically enough, he wants to change the 1990 Constitution that was written by his predecessor and his heir, Hugo Chavez. And certainly his opponents believe he wants to rewrite it by calling a constituent assembly in order to consolidate and increase his own power. This can be considered sort of a self-coup in which the government that's actually in charge overthrows essentially the judiciary and the legislature and brings all that power unto himself.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about the popular support Maduro has, or the lack of support, considering these protests, and why.
Well, he became president in 2013 after Hugo Chavez died of cancer. And Chavez, who had this program of 21st century socialism, as a good old-fashioned Latin American populist, he was very popular, and he did do a lot of good things for his people. Nicolas Maduro has been called Chavez without the charm and also without the leadership skills. His popularity is very low. The polls suggest that maybe 80% of Venezuelans would get rid of him right away if they could. And so we have this political crisis that was heightened, not only his unpopularity, but then the Supreme Court, which is essentially under his thumb or a puppet of him, decided a couple months ago that they were going to essentially take away the powers from the Congress or the National Assembly. And they overturned that after protests. But that is one of the things going on. Another is that Venezuela is having really severe economic problems. Their economy is contracting, maybe 10% last year, 25% over the last 3 years.
What does that mean for everyday Venezuelans? Are they – is it hyperinflation? What is happening? There's less buying power for the people.
Hyperinflation, triple-digit inflation, but also all kinds of problems with regard to food, lack of medicines. There's a concern about child malnutrition, the return of malaria. There's the so-called Maduro diet. It's been found that over the last year, maybe three quarters of Venezuelans have lost weight in the order of, on average, 18 to 19 pounds in a year because of the lack of food.
So we could have a Venezuela. Could we have a Venezuela long term? I mean, this sounds like heading towards a population that is starving.
Yeah, and Venezuela really seems to be on the brink. It's not clear what will happen next. It could be that it's, we hope not, going to descend into lawlessness. The military could play an important role, either in terms of supporting the government or deciding to overturn it. A lot of people, especially opponents of the regime, believe that Maduro wants to set up a Castro-style autocracy in Venezuela.
What about Maduro's rivals? Are they do they exist? Are they do they have support? Are they allowed to exist?
They do exist, and in fact, part of what started perhaps or encouraged the move towards a more autocratic regime was that in late 2015, the legislative elections brought an opposition party to power. So they control the national legislature, which would help to explain why he wants to take away their powers. And so they have been very much criticizing him. Even his own attorney general, who otherwise supported Hugo Chavez and his whole project, she has said that his effort to create this constituent assembly, to write a new constitution, and the Supreme Court's move to take away the powers in the National Assembly, she said this has created a constitutional rupture. And he's trying to get rid of her. But actually, it's the Congress that has the power to get rid of her.
Interesting, too. Our president, Donald Trump, has weighed in on this strife in Venezuela, threatening what I see in his words. He's saying strong and swift economic actions against Venezuela's government if the ruling party, Maduro's party, goes ahead with these plans to rewrite the Constitution and take power away from the National Assembly. Tell us about the U.S. connection. The U.S. position is clear here. This is a government that Donald Trump or others would call leftist, right?
Oh, clearly, yes. Yeah. And there's long been very strained relations between the two, with Chavez and Maduro using playing the blame game, suggesting it's not our failed policies that have gotten us to where we are. It's because of the United States.
Okay. So what do you see as the future possible paths in Venezuela, given what's going on there now, the near starvation of much of the population, the protests resulting in many injuries and many deaths as well? What could happen here, Linda, the way you see it?
Well, certainly we would hope that there would be a negotiated solution. There doesn't seem to be a lot of traction for that right now. Perhaps we could hope for some enlightened leadership and Maduro realizing enough is enough. The country is suffering. We need to change things. We need to come together. And simply fighting each other out in the streets is not the way to go about it. Enacting a number of constitutionally questionable moves is also not the way to do it. So, you know, I think those of us who are advocates of a democracy would really like to see much more accountability, much more paying attention to what the people really want and need, and much less attention to the government creating more power for itself.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, spending this half hour with Linda Barrow and Pedro Dos Santos talking about two countries in South America that are seeing some significant political and economic problems. Venezuela, we've just been talking about. We want to shift now our focus to Brazil with Pedro Dos Santos, who is in Brazil right now in Sao Paulo. He's Director of International Studies at Luther College in Decora. He's doing research right now in Brazil. Pedro, give us a scene setter for what's going on in Brazil, just to make sure we're acquainted with Brazil. It's huge power, world power, the largest non-nuclear power in the world, the fourth largest democracy, home to over 200 million people, also in this case mired in political crisis. Tell us about it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It starts with the economic downturn in 2013, right? There's a combination of protests going on at the same time, and that leads to the beginning of the contesting Dilma Rousseff's government, who is from the Workers' Party. The unraveling really comes with the car wash investigation, which is a massive investigation by the federal police here that has rocked the Brazilian political world. Which, you know, as a consequence of this and other dynamics that are going on, led to the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff in 2016. Currently, the vice president that was from a different party, from the PMDB, the Workers' Party is a left-wing party. The PMDB is more of a center-right party, and they were coalesced to make a coalition government to work. The current president, Michel Temer, is also involved in a lot of these investigations going on with this major kickback scheme for the Brazilian petroleum company Petrobras and other companies as well. He's currently the most unpopular president in the history of Democratic Brazil, with only 7% of approval ratings, the lowest of any president, including right before Dilma Rousseff's impeachment, her approval ratings, and the approval ratings of Fernando Collor in 1992 when he was also impeached, when he resigned before being impeached, actually. And also this, you know, there was a trifecta here going on. There was a massive economic downturn. There was a major corruption scandal. And there was a political wrangling going on between the Workers' Party, which is the left-leaning party, and the right-of-center parties in Brazil. So after Dilma got impeached, they had pushed for some very business-friendly reforms, such as the labor reforms just passed last week. They led to made some protests around the country, including inside the Senate. And now they're trying to push the Social Security reform, which, again, is very business-friendly, anti-labor, this more left-leaning union policies that are going on. And also, I can't forget to mention Lula as well, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, which was the president before Dilma Rousseff from the Workers' Party as well. There's a similar dynamic between Chavez and Maduro and Lula and Dilma, right, where Lula was also very popular. He was the most popular outgoing president in the history of Brazil, with over 80% approval rating when he left. And he basically appointed Dilma to be his successor. And, and Dilma is not very charismatic either, and really struggled negotiating with Congress, which a lot of people, I believe, led to her impeachment as well. So this is what's going on right now. There's an economic downturn, a political disaster. You know, right now, people are actually calling for Temer's impeachment as well, the vice president's impeachment, and in a way just waiting for the 2018 elections to come around.
There's another aspect of this. We know, of course, the Amazon rainforest is a huge part of Brazil. They're currently linked, has implications for the climate change around the world. But the current Brazilian president, Temer, is he pushing some legislation that would remove some protections on the Amazon rainforest?
Yeah, that is correct. He's trying to allow both loggers and ranchers to cut more of the rainforest at a much higher pace than is already happening. You know, he was a few weeks ago. He was in Norway, one of our biggest donors for environment related issues, and he got a talking to by the Norwegian government. You know, he showed face and he said he's going to try harder. But as you mentioned, they already tried to pass some legislation again, business friendly. The goal for Tamer's government is to try to make the economy go, you know, run again, make the economy grow again, and that means, you know, in their mind, it means less regulations, less taxations on businesses, you know, and this labor reform and Social Security reform that also has a major impact on large businesses.
Pedro, does Brazil have in common with Venezuela sort of what must be from the people, the average Brazilian's perspective, that the government is just whatever party you turn to, it's corrupt, and politics in general, just the corrupt business? Is there that sort of disheartened view of government in general in Brazil?
Yeah, it's definitely that view. It has been since I remember growing up. It's been the same view. The difference is that Brazil has 35 political parties, right? There's a large number of parties, and of those, really five are the major parties that really are able to negotiate and make differences at the national level, right? Some of these parties are more local parties. But yeah, there's a general disenchantment with politics, you know, and I personally feel this way, and some of the people I know here feel this way too, that with the scandals is actually a good thing, because we're finally punishing and arresting the people that would not be arrested 10, 15 years ago. This corruption has been going on for a long time. You know, the Petrobras kickback scheme that was discovered now really has been going on since the 60s, right? It's just the scale has completely, increased manyfold in this 40 years. But that's definitely disenchantment and then disenfranchisement as well. People are not really, not excited, but not even like, don't really care about politics as much. They want everybody in jail.
Mm-hmm. Linda Barrow in Iowa City of Coe College, you're nodding your head vigorously here talking about this. This is something that the two countries have in common. It's just a disaffection with their government, lack of faith in their government from the common people.
And very deep-rooted corruption, which is a problem throughout much of Latin America. But I very much agree with Pedro that while these heads are rolling, top economic and political folks, this is something that you don't always see. It seems like things are getting a lot worse in terms of corruption, but actually people are being held to account. The government's functioning as it should. The judiciary is not simply serving as the lapdog of the executive and the legislature or of the business class. And so I think it's actually, although it's very disruptive now, it's a really good sign for Brazil in the long run that people are tired of it.
Right, but the future still hangs in the balance. It's not clear that democratic forces will come out on top, Linda, or is it?
I think democracy is robust enough in Brazil that democracy will come out on top. That's much less clear in Venezuela.
Pedro, are you optimistic in the same way Linda is in Brazil's case?
I agree with that. I would say, like, maybe around the time when the impeachment for Dilma Rousseff was going on, like right before the impeachment process started, actually, there was some grumblings about military coming in, but it was never strong enough. It was just a small sector population. The military itself never really, you know, mentioned that they were going to come in. And I think, you know, as broken as the system is, I do think that democracy, as we know, at least as free and fair elections, will continue. The dynamics of politics may change. There's a major there's a call for political reform, so electoral reform, change how we elect our politicians. That may or may not solve problems, you know, because it's the politicians who are involved in corruption allegations, the ones changing the rules. But I agree with Linda that this is much stronger than Venezuela. The tradition of turnover in elections have been going on for a longer time now in Brazil.
Pedro dos Santos joining us via Skype from Sao Paulo in Brazil. He's director of international studies program at Luther College in Decorah. You are in Brazil doing some research now, Pedro. We have about 4 minutes left. Research for a new book. Tell us what specifically you're looking at there on site.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at Dilma Rousseff's presidency and how it affects women's empowerment. So we're looking at how having a woman president has changed in any way the amount of women in power at the executive level, policies for women, and the symbolic effect of having a woman president. You know, when we started this project, she was actually still popular before the 2013 crisis, and now it moves on to this impeachment as well. So then the impeachment comes along, too, in terms of what is the legacy of having a woman impeached to women in politics and women in general in Brazil. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the focus of our book.
When we compare the United States with Brazil in terms of the cultural aspects of this, also women in politics, are the U.S. and Brazil similar in terms of the number of women represented in such positions?
Brazil is actually lower. You know, we had the woman president, which was kind of a fluke to a certain extent, because our numbers are very low. We're ranked, you know, there's a ranking. The Inter-Parliamentary Union has a ranking for women in parliament, and we rank in the low 100s. You know, in Brazil, where the United States is, I think, in around the 50s, you know, in terms of the ranking of countries. So Brazil actually has less women. And I would say that the culture in Brazil and the culture in Latin America is actually more sexist as well, right? And that the power politics is still very, very masculine and really dominated by strong men and strong positions that have been there for a long time. So political dynasties are a big thing here as well.
Mm-hmm. Pedro, before we have to go, we have just a minute left. There's an Iowa connection to the upheaval in Brazil. Tell us about that. There's a company called JBS Holding that also has dealings here in Iowa. What's going on there?
Yeah, JBS is the largest meat processing company in the world, and they're front and center in this whole corruption scandal. The presidents have just done a plea bargaining and basically told on everybody. It recorded the current president negotiating with them bribes between some political allies. JBS bought Swift a few years ago, and Swift has plants in two Iowa towns, Marshalltown and Ottumwa. And they own meat processing plants in over 20 American states, Mexico, and Canada. And, you know, they have been front and center in this. The Justice Department in the United States are also investigating them because of these corruption, not allegations, but corruption. They actually said that they have been doing corrupt dealings in Brazil. You know, and that has really affected, you know, their market value, you know, and that may have a direct impact in many states in the United States, including Iowa.
Okay. Very good. Thanks you for tying Brazil into Iowa and the United States and giving us an idea of what's going on in these two countries, Brazil and Venezuela. Pedro dos Santos joining us via Skype from Sao Paulo in Brazil, director of the International Studies Program at Luther College and assistant professor of political science there. Linda Barrow, professor of political science at Coe College in our Iowa City studio. Linda and Pedro, thank you so much for this discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, coming up in just a moment, a tornado ripped through the town of McGregor along the Mississippi last week here in Iowa. Luckily, no fatalities or injuries. We'll see how cleanup is going and how much damage that twister caused when we return. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.